I'm an African American, so having that hyphen is just, I've never really thought of it because it's been said so much in my life that it's just really become just like a piece of who I am. If you drew a picture of someone's face, you're not going to forget the eyes. Obviously, a person is going to have eyes. Obviously, I'm African American.
Welcome to The Detour. I'm Adam Davis. You just heard the voice of Beatty, a student at Adrian C. Nelson High School in Happy Valley, Oregon. A few weeks ago, Beatty and four other students, Jalen, Juliana, Malachi, and Steve, joined us on a Tuesday morning in a second floor classroom to talk about identity, hyphens, belonging, stories that shape us, and cheeseburgers. This conversation was a follow-up to a packed school day in early February that began with 24 students from five affinity groups, as well as six educators, gathering in the high school library to participate in a workshop led by Narrative 4, a nonprofit organization that uses personal storytelling to build empathy between young people. Narrative 4 was co-founded and is co-led by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Colin McCann. And Colin was part of the story-sharing workshop in the library in Happy Valley that morning. Later that day, Colin joined Oregon Humanities at the Alberta Rose Theater for a conversation about stories, national character, identity, and the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, as well as the work with students that Narrative 4 is doing. This episode of The Detour first explores what the Adrian C. Nelson students made of their experience in the story-sharing workshop, and how they think about who they are. We then turn to Colin McCann's reflections on how stories might hold the world together, or, in some cases, break it apart. Now, back to Beatty and Malachi, followed by Steve, Juliana, and Jalen. It's Tuesday morning at Adrian Nelson High School. Maybe for starters, could you just say your name and what year you are?
Well, my name is Betuel. People call me Beatty, and I'm a sophomore.
Cool, thanks.
My name is Malika Aguilar, and I'm a sophomore as well.
All right, cool. A few weeks ago, you both participated in the story exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask what it felt like to tell a story about you to someone you didn't know so well. What did it feel like to do that?
Well, at first, nobody really knew each other. So at first, everybody was like really shy. But then I think really quickly, everybody started to like talk to each other more. And I just felt personally that it was really nice to speak to another person that I've never seen before, or never really talked to, about what my life was like and how I came to where I am now. Because most people don't really think about what their life has been like. So thinking about that, but also having such a short amount of time, it was really just kind of eye-opening. And I kind of went home thinking, huh, what else has happened in my life? And I just started thinking about other stories that's happened.
I like that.
You remember what it felt like for you, Malika?
Yes, for me, at first, like the person I was speaking to, he understood more English than he could speak. He was Ukrainian. And as he was telling me his story, I was like, okay. Like, I was fully understanding it, and I appreciated that he felt good enough to tell me his story and felt comfortable enough. And when I was thinking about my story on what I was going to tell him, I was like, dang, like, how is he going to tell my story? So in my head, I was just thinking, how is he going to tell my story? Because he can't really speak that much English. Mm. And then I started thinking, like, that's like a selfish way to look at it. At least I'm here understanding his story and putting myself in his shoes. So it felt good to be able to communicate to everybody else and tell his story.
Easy or difficult to tell your partner's story as if it was you?
My partner's story, like the person's story that I was supposed to tell was kind of heartbreaking a little bit. So I didn't know how to like really convey that. So I didn't want to like have that person have a negative connotation of that person through other people's eyes. And second, I wanted to tell it right. So
Now, you guys came to that event that Narrative 4 put on with the affinity group that you're a part of, or with an affinity group that you're a part of.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's the affinity group you're a part of, Malachi?
Latin Student Union.
Latin Student.
So it's LSU, Latin Student Union.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Betty?
I'm the representative of the Black Student Union here, which is also known as BSU. We're open to everybody that supports Black people and Black lives in general.
Yeah. So this is actually super interesting, and I think it's super related to the idea of a story exchange and even this episode, which started with this conversation with Colin McCann, who was here. One of the early questions I asked him was, he identifies as Irish American. And I asked him, like, what does it feel like to be hyphenated? To be both Irish and American, to be Irish American, how much does that hyphen matter? And so can I ask that question to you guys? Like, how much do you think of yourself as having a hyphen as part of who you are?
Personally, I'm an African American. So having that hyphen is just, I've never really thought of it because it's been said so much in my life that it's just really become just like a piece of who I am. It's just more like if you drew a picture of someone's face, you're not going to forget the eyes. Obviously, a person is going to have eyes. Obviously, I'm African American. So I don't know. I never really thought of it in that sense.
Yeah. What do you think about a hyphen?
I feel like I always felt like Mexican. And I remember growing up, I grew up in the apartments in Beaverton, and all the kids around me, they were all Mexicans and Hispanics, like Mexicans, and they know where their family came from, Mexico. Huh. And then they would always tell me, like, you're not dark enough to be a Mexican or like Hispanic. Or they would say, like, where's your family from? Like, what part of Mexico are they from? But my family, they're from Texas, because Texas used to be Mexico. So my family are Texans, but we're like Mexican. So like growing up in there with around all those kids who like knew their background, like where they came from, Mexico, and they're like dark skin. At first, I'm like, dang, like, am I Mexican? Like, I was questioning myself. And I feel like when I moved out here and as I came out here, it made me stand out more. Like, as a Mexican, I really feel, like, perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I am. Mm-hmm.
Just to piggyback off of that, I was born in Maryland. So in that area, there are a lot of Ethiopians. So when I moved here when I was, like, around 9 years old, that's when I really started noticing the amount of Ethiopians. Because back then, it was, like, so normalized because I used to see them, like, every single day, right? And then I come here, and there is still, like, a big population of Ethiopians, but not so much in schools. There are so many Asians here. There's so many white people here. So it made me kind of scared. Is it going to be super different? It's going to be hard to make friends. But, yeah, it's been, like, not so hard to make friends because I feel like no matter what type of person you are here at Nelson, you're always going to find at least one or two friends who are kind of like you in some type of sense. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Is it unusual to be in a room where you have, for example, the Latino students affinity group, African-American students affinity group, Ukrainian students affinity? Is it unusual to be in a room with so much attention to the groups that the people are part of, or is that a normal thing?
I thought it was kind of interesting. It was kind of fun sitting at a table with my like Latin people, my LSU, and then looking around, just seeing like the different shades of color and the different affinity groups. It was kind of like all of us were just like, all of us from our affinity group were like important. So it felt like nice, like we all have like our own spot here.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. How about you, Betty?
It didn't feel unusual per se, because I know that was like one of the main reasons why all of us were here to connect. But for me, like personally, it wasn't unusual. It just felt like I was talking to like just a random person, because I talked to so many different people with different ethnicities every single day. So yeah, to me, it wasn't really unusual. It was just like talking to a person I was told to talk to. And then that slowly became like a person I really wanted to talk to.
It's interesting. I remember being in a room where the person who was leading this discussion that I was in, they encouraged us to pick five like features that would characterize us. Like I would pick man, American, from Chicago, you know, whatever. I'd pick those. And then they said, okay, get rid of two of them. Mm. So we were down to three. And then they said, okay, you can pick one. And I remember thinking, that's a pretty intense question.
And what was the one that you picked?
Weirdly, I did pick American. And I don't identify strongly. But I felt like there was something about it that felt like, ah, if I show up in other places in the world, or if I try to understand myself, there's something about who I am that is. I don't know. Do you have a sense of what you'd pick if someone would cruelly push you like I'm pushing you now to do that?
If I had to go from 5 to 3 to 2 to 1, I would either pick Ethiopian or woman. That would most likely be my top two choices. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could choose between Ethiopian and woman. Because there's such like big parts of my life. But I think the reason that I would choose Ethiopian is because when I'm reading a book and they say the main character is a woman, I don't get as excited as I do if they were Ethiopian. Mm. Be like, oh, the main character is a girl. Next page. And then I see Ethiopian. I'm like, I can't wait to see how she is like me, how she represents us.
Yeah.
So
that's good. I could relate to that. I think if I broke it all down, it would probably have to just be my ethnicity, so Mexican, because that's who I am, and I just love representing it.
Yeah,
because it like feels good.
Yeah,
That's great. Last thing I'll ask is if you have a word in your head, any word that you don't need to explain, you got a word in your head now.
Any word? Well, after this. Identity, probably that would be the word that I've gathered from here.
I'll say feelings.
Cool. Hey, thank you for spending this Tuesday morning talking into microphones with headphones on in this classroom.
Thank
really
you for having us.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, Mr. Adam.
Thank you, Malachi. Thank you, Betty. Yeah.
You're listening to The Detour with students at Adrian C. Nelson High School.
I mean, I guess I could start off, y'all. Howdy, everyone. My name is Jalen. I know I just said howdy. That's crazy. It's Tuesday morning. You start stuff off. I am a junior here at Agency Nelson High School.
Thank you.
I'm Juliana. I'm a senior here. So, yeah.
I'm Steve. I'm a junior at Agency Nelson High School.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday morning. And you guys were all here several weeks ago when Narrative 4 did the story exchange. And maybe for starters, just want to ask, like, what did it feel like to share a story with someone you didn't know?
I feel like it was really unusual because each story is so different, and it started like really weirdly because we had to do like association with wards and all of that stuff, and we were like really suspicious about all of that. So I think it was really like interesting, but also like it was really uncomfortable in the beginning, but by the end it just felt like so natural, like to share your stories and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I would say it was a really fun experience because I thought it was going to be just like a normal just group talk experience. I'm really used to talking to multiple people from multiple states, so I'm like, okay, it's just another day walk in the park. But it was so much more different of an experience because I'm talking to so many different people from different countries. So you have so many different perspectives other than just, you know, a perspective that you might see in the States.
Yeah, so the fact that people were from different places changed it in some significant way for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about you, Jalen?
I was just kind of expecting like them. This is going to be like we all sit around in like a giant circle and then we all just share a story about ourselves and people get to ask questions. I thought it was going to be like, yeah, like an easy walk in the park and be like, oh, I'm just talking. Like I'm like talking. But then, you know, they actually had me think and I was like, oh, wait, hold up. Wait, what's a story that I can actually like share that like actually fall under like these categories or like, what do I want to like choose? Like there's just so many and then there's just like so little at the same time. I'm like, whoa, This is hard. Actually, this is really hard.
Mm-hmm. Hard to choose a story that met the rules or hard to choose a story that represented you?
I think a bit of both. I think just hard to fit the story that like fit the rules, but then hard to choose a story that really represented me as a person because I'm like, I mean, there's this story, but I feel like that doesn't really like say enough as like for like something I could exchange with someone else who might be telling me something valuable to them. Mm.
How do you know what's a story that's valuable to you about you? Like, what are you paying attention to? You go, yeah, this is a story that's valuable about me.
I would say if a story relates to you, I see that many, you know, people, if they try to get communities together, they're trying to, you know, relate to that community. They're trying to bring everybody together through relation. What's a piece of you that matches in everybody?
A piece of you that matches in everybody. Huh, that's interesting.
I would say also a story that actually like changed you in some way. So I think each story has an outcome. And if it's that story changed you in somehow and other person can also relate to that, I think it's really important because this perspective of actually changing your perspective on something or having like other experience, it's really important also. Mm-hmm.
They're like really taking all the good stuff, you know, I'm gonna be honest. And then Steve, that was looking kind of a bar with that word that what you said earlier. That was a bar, Steve. So I'm gonna give you that. I think, yeah, if the story can just kind of like relate to you or it's just something that you see that could be like a part of your history in some way, like the story that I chose was just like the story of like my grandparents and like how they came to Oregon. So I think for that, it's just something like the history, like my family tree. That's why the story was important to me.
Are you game to give us a short version of that story?
Yeah, I could try. Let's see. So my family, my grandparents are both from South Arkansas. They both moved to Oregon separate times, but they just so happened to meet in Oregon.
Huh.
They went to like different colleges. My grandpa went to the army. My grandma went to college and stuff like that. You know, they both did their jobs. They met, fell in love at a young age, and then got married. And then the rest is history. You know, they had three kids, and then those three kids had like 2 to 3 kids each, and then there's just like 8 grandkids.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I just want to note for a minute that like as I look around, even this small room this morning, I'm thinking like, okay, so Arkansas, Ethiopia, Mexico,
Kenya,
Ukraine.
So like, that's kind of unbelievable that we're sitting here on a Tuesday morning from so many places. It strikes me as unbelievable. I don't know, did anything that makes you think about or feel, Liliana?
I think not because I moved here like 4 years ago. And like when I moved from Ukraine, I traveled through a lot of countries. I went from Ukraine to Romania, to Hungary, to Germany, to France, and then to Switzerland, and then back to France, and then I moved to the United States. So throughout like that road trip from Ukraine to United States, I actually like experienced a lot of like different people from different countries. So it's really believable to me, guys.
It's believable to you because Steve, how does that strike you to think about those of us in the room right now and where our families are from?
It's really like, it's mind-blowing. Where I come from in Kenya, because around the population is around 54 million and they give like less than 1,000 opportunities for people to come to the States. So you're basically fighting for an opportunity, hoping that, you know, you have what it takes to not only come to the United States, but, you know, represent your country back at home and be able to show that, yeah, we can really do something if you really open the door for us.
That's intense. That feels like responsibility or pressure or something. Do you feel that?
Slightly, a little bit. I feel like they look up to us.
Okay.
But, you know, you're also trying to represent also in the United States. Mm-hmm. that you're not only just coming here just to, you know, meet, but also bring something to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And Jalen, you started with your grandparents coming from Arkansas, presumably part of the Great Migration is what I hear. But like when you hear about all the other countries people here are pointing to, what's that make you think?
It makes me think of how small I am in the world. Last year, I got to meet students from Italy and Spain, and I was just so fascinated. I kept asking them questions like, hey, what is this like for you, or what do you think? And they were just so happy to answer. And then I answered questions for them about the U.S. And then sometimes I was like, man, y'all came here. Portland's so boring sometimes. So, like, look at the rain. Like, look at the weather. Like, I guess for me, it will be boring at this point because I've lived here my whole life. But for them, it's something new, something exciting, because this is like the U.S. And like the ideal high school experience is like supposed to be here. Like, I remember asking them, I was like, so what's like you're excited for? It's like, oh, like the prom or like, oh, the sports or something. I was like, yeah, that's pretty valid. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a story of this high school, of Adrian Nelson High School, that, like, what's the story about Adrian Nelson High School? Is there a shared story about Adrian Nelson High School that you could tell if you were telling someone you knew at home in Ukraine, or if you were connecting with someone back in Kenya, or if you were like, yeah, I still have cousins in Arkansas, and they said, where are you going to high school? What's that place like? What would you say about the high school you're at?
I would say it represents something bigger than just a student. Represents the community, because Miss Agency Nelson was basically, her story was fighting systemic racism, because she was from Arkansas as well. And since high school, she was always fighting, you know, racism and unfairness. And so she made it known. She spoke out about it, and she became very successful and, you know, put her head to her goals, like her mind on her goals, and she was able to achieve them, you know, be very successful.
That's great. That's helpful. Yeah.
I would say Adrian C. Nelson gives so many opportunities in schools in Ukraine. Even in private schools that I went to, we don't have that much opportunities like we have here. And it's amazing that like one public school in Happy Valley, Oregon, can make such a big difference for many people. Huh. Like big field trips, big clubs, so many other communities. Like we have so multiple clubs for each and every member of us that it just unites all of us at the same time. Even though like we're so different, we're so the same at the same time.
Mm-hmm. If I were going to ask you to say like, not the professional story, not the polite one. Is there something like, if you were talking to a couple friends and there's a story about this high school, what would you say?
That's a hard one because...
Because we're recording, or it's hard just otherwise?
I think it's both, because we're recording and then I have to think about it. I think a story that I always like to tell to my friends is just the grind that I have to do. Well, not me, but we have to do for like our BSU assembly. BSU has like the best assemblies every year. So I think it's just that pressure of living up to that and, you know, to just show off. I like consider myself one of the leaders for BSU. So that's why I just said me. Mm-hmm. But I think just being on that grind, like me, Beatty, there's some others, like we just like worked hard to put on an assembly for everyone. But I think just doing that, and then having Judge Nelson there. Judge Nelson is so supportive. Cool. And whenever you reach out to her and ask her if she wants to come, she like makes time in her day just to try to make it out to us. And she always just be there for us, not only like the BSU, but for sports, where like our basketball teams, our football teams, our dance, our cheer. Like I've seen her like all over for like different sports. And that just says a lot about her and how much she values this school and the community that you're here with.
Yeah, she really shows up. I have seen her show up over the years since I've been here as well. So that's great to hear. But it's interesting to think that sometimes a name feels far away from what a place is. I want to ask you the same last question really that I asked you guys. And that is just if you have a word in your head. Don't explain the word, just any word that's in your head right now.
You really don't want me to go first because it's just a stupid word.
That's then I absolutely do.
I was
but don't explain it. Just say it.
Oh, cheeseburger.
Excellent.
Cheeseburger was that word.
Great.
Do you want to go next?
I was thinking unity.
Huh. I was thinking freedom.
Okay. Hey.
Can I change my word?
You can't change it, but you can add it.
Yeah. Okay, I'll add to my word. Togetherness, I think that's something that really, just like unity, togetherness, I think, yeah.
All right. So I want to say thanks to all five of you, both for talking with us this morning and for just how you're showing up. It's great. It's really awesome. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. This is Anna, producer on The Detour. This year on the show and in conversations all over Oregon, we're taking the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence as an opportunity to explore questions related to democracy, equality, and freedom. And we want to hear from you. What's your wish for the United States in 2026 or for the next 250 years? What are your hopes or ideas for how this anniversary might be observed? Tell us by recording a voice message on your phone and sending it to detour@oregonhumanities.org. You can also call our phone line at 503-607-8592. Again, that's 503-607-8592. We might share your message in a future episode. Okay, now let's get back to the show.
Let's turn to our conversation with Colin McCann at the Alberta Rose Theater. We start with a few questions for our audience.
If you are in any sense hyphenated, some kind of mix of identities, can you make a little noise? If I say American national character, a picture comes to your head. Can you make a little noise? Okay. That's a striking silence, and I hope is good. So, given that the questions today are around nation and character, I want to start by asking you that the question, really, how do you identify in terms of nationality, and what does it mean to you? You talked about being Irish, and now you've been in the States for many years. And if pushed, would you say, I'm a little more Irish than I am American?
Yeah.
Or a little more, like, what would it mean to say I'm American 20%? What would even that mean?
I will tell you this. This is bad.
That's good. We're already there. It's good.
So when I go, I have two passports. I have an Irish passport and an American passport. No matter where I go, when I get to the airport and have to show my passport, I look at the lines. Is the European line going to be shorter than the American line? Or, you know, and I'll go either way. This is me. It's like I'm very purple about this sort of thing. However, this is where the real confession comes in. I keep my Irish passport over my American passport as I go through. Because, I don't know, well, I'm Irish. And I live in America, and I feel like a New Yorker. And yes, I'm all these different things, but I really exist in the place where all these other stories of other people are also existing at mm-hmm. the same time.
Mm-hmm. Earlier today, when we were at Adrian Nelson High School, one of the things you said, which I've also seen you write, is that stories hold the world together. So I want to keep pushing a little bit on this, and that is, how important are national stories? Are they important?
If you look at Ulysses and then you read James Joyce, and you know, when Bloom is talking and he's been asked by the citizen, "What is your nation?" and he says, "Ireland. I was born here, Ireland." And but then the question is, but what is a nation? Well, a nation is people living in the same place, but it's also people living in different places. So this stuff is messy.
And I think the embrace of messiness in relation to nationality is something that we have to bring back into the debate. If you can be from many different places, we can embrace the proper democracy that we're supposed to understand. And we're living in really broken times. We're really living in difficult times where all our connections to these things are exposed. And you and I talked a little bit backstage about like what I like to call the disease of certainty. We're all so certain about what it is that we think. We're all so certain that we are entirely right. And what it becomes is these canals of certainty. But very few of us are operating on the floodplains in between. And I wish that we could talk to our country somehow and say, let's get out of our canals of certainty. We're all so right. We're all so correct. We're all so sure that this is the absolute truth, which gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and somehow flood the canals and push us out into the floodplains that are in between and get it a little bit messy again. And if we can embrace that sort of messiness, then you get back to some of that original American character. And it's interesting that, you know, the silence we heard about like America tonight, the American character, which was so inviting, so beautiful, so tempting, when you think of someone like Walt Whitman again. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself.
I mean, I'll just say this in part to push into a difficult spot, that it is worrisome to me to be in a room of 400 people and at least in that moment not have noise around the possibility of seeing national character clearly.
I agree with you.
I think that's a concern.
Yeah.
And I think you could both have a clear picture of national character and not hold it too certainly, which feels different from not having a clear picture of national character. Could our country produce Walt Whitman today? Maybe that's a way to ask the question. Now I'm putting you in the role of sort of Tocqueville or Crèvecoeur, someone who sees us more clearly, even though you've been here for a while, but in part because you're not from here originally. So do you feel like you're sensing that we actually don't know who we are nationally?
I will tell you that I do think that there is a very distinct and available national character. And I think that I still will be the pessimist of the intellect and the optimist of the will. I want it to happen. I went out to, I'm going to mispronounce it, Clackamas.
You got it.
Yeah? All right. So out there today with these kids, by the way, is Malachi in the audience tonight? There was a young student who said he might be here. Is he here?
All right. Good to see you again.
I am so happy that this young man is here. Stand up for a second. Malachi was part of the storytelling that we did today. And we had a group of Ukrainian kids here, and we had a group of queer kids here, and we had a group of kids who were from an African-American background, and we had kids in all these different groups. And Malachi was part of the Latino group, right? And everyone was separate at first. And then after they got a chance to tell stories to one another, there was a huge coming together, a sort of Americanness of character that was broken down by the fact that they were able to listen to and to tell one another stories. There was a beautiful Americanness, the sort of Americanness that I grew up with and dreamed about. So I come from Ireland, and you know, I grew up with literature and the sense of the Irish identity, this nationhood, this what is my nation, what is my nation. But I always had a thought about what America happened to be. And at the age of 21, I came to the United States to sit down to try to write a novel. Failed miserably and ended up taking a bicycle then across the United States. So started in Boston and finished in San Francisco, being an entirely different person because I learned the value of stories and storytelling. And I loved meeting people, and I still love meeting people, but I loved listening to people. But something very elementary struck me at that very young age is that we all have a story. And this is the vast democracy that we actually enter. I didn't realize, wasn't conscious of it, right? But years and years later, then I got together with these artists. We were organized by a woman by the name of Lisa Consiglio, who wanted to bring all these artists together. She said, but what is the highest aim of storytelling? And we got together and we said, well, the highest aim of storytelling is to listen to and understand somebody else's story. Not even to tell your own story. And this was profound for me. This shifted me. And this shifted me into this organization, Narrative 4, that brought me to Malachi's school today and brought me into this room with 24 students, not a lot of students. But what happened over the course of a couple of hours was so sort of nuclearly powerful that I knew that a couple of lives would be shifted. And I just felt that this is, in this mess of students who are here, this is a very good portrait of what I really would like America to be in its 250th birthday, and especially on its 350th birthday.
Yeah, and in a way, I guess that's, I've been thinking about this since I heard you say this morning that stories hold the world together. They also divide the world up.
That's right.
And I feel like, in a way, that's what's been happening increasingly, not just in this country, but with a lot of power in this country. And so I guess I want to ask about that power of storytelling. Stories about we seem to be incredibly powerful, and especially when it's a we that we can hold on to in some way. So how to build stories that feel expansive rather than contracting?
Well, first of all, stories are really dangerous. So you can listen to me talk about, you know, my experience at Clackamas today and say, how wonderful, how twee, how like that little boy. But guess what? Stories can take your house away. Stories can take your country away. Stories can take your identity away. Right? And people use them in all sorts of ways. So this is a battle. But the embrace of somebody else's story is where I believe that a lot of the really true muscularity comes from, and the ability to be strong. Rather than coming indoors, closing the curtains, like shrinking our imaginations down to some GPS coordinate, if we can somehow break out of all of those strictures, then I think that we can go somewhere different. Is this naive? Possibly. Is this sentimental? No. Is it full of sentiment? Yes. There's a difference.
So like if we were taking the anniversary of the Declaration seriously.
Yeah.
That short document tells a story pretty powerfully. What's your impression that the abiding story from, say, the Declaration forward is? Do you have a sense of what the key elements of that story as a storyteller might be? As we internalize.
I mean, life liberty and happiness, but what is all of that? And can you actually, you know, define all of that? No, you can't. I will not be comfortable with somebody telling me, well, I'm going to tell you about life, right? Or I'm going to tell you about liberty, or I'm going to tell you about the pursuit of happiness. That's boring. But if somebody tells me of a story, then suddenly that particular story, the personal story, the non-didactic story, is the one that actually binds us together. I would beseech these communities that seem to be at odds with one another to somehow come together and not try to win an argument, not try to be cool, not try to be smarter, not try to drag the other person down into the drowning canal that they live in, but to say, yeah. Now, does that sound a little bit twee? Yeah. Did someone say yeah? You're probably right, but it's actually true. So, for example, I will tell you that in Narrative 4, we brought together kids from the South Bronx and Eastern Kentucky. You get them in a room together, and they're absolutely terrified of one another. I've seen grown boys from the South Bronx cry their eyes out because I'm about to ask them to exchange a story with a young student from Kentucky. And then suddenly, when they realize that they have a story and that they can tell a story and that the story doesn't have to win an argument, but it can just be an ordinary story, then things that get into that messy, nuanced, beautiful area that actually lives in between. How are we going to do that as a nation? I have no idea.
So I do want to ask you, what, looking towards building that sense of connection, what can we count on that we can go to and say, here are the things you know we can build on to get people connecting across the kinds of differences you're describing?
People want to create a sense of fear. They want to create a sense of other. Mm-hmm. Mostly these are corporations and their governments, and they are wealthy people who have an investment in keeping us away from one another. I do think that a lot of it is about money and power. And I do think that those things, can they be entirely dissolved? Of course not. But you have to dream yourself into a way that we can actually begin to really sort of try to talk to one another. Is this stuff possible? Is it possible between Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland, or nationalists and loyalists, or whatever way you look at it? I do think it's possible, but it's really grassroots. It's really deep down grassroots. If an alien came down from outer space, would that alien be able to understand why we fund like this type of human and not fund that type of human? They would not. They would be completely perplexed by it all. So one of the things that we do at Narrative 4 is we want stories to lead to action, to lead to change, and things to not come from above, but to come from underneath. So if we are generous and kind to, you know, our schools, and we start to like invest in them and so on, and allow these people to come along and open the debate for us, rather than us believing that we have the answer, I think something profound can happen. But I think fundamentally, you know, somebody like Greta Thunberg is right. You know, you walk out of your classroom on a Friday afternoon on your own and you're embarrassed. And then the following week, six of your classmates come out. And the following month, all of the students in your country come out because you're devastated by the idea of climate change. all of that is going to come from underneath. Is it going to win in the end? I don't know.
I mean, I will say, I guess, a couple things about the example you just gave us. One is that alien has become such a vexed word, right?
I mean, I'm an alien.
That choice of word itself reflects the challenge. And the other is that an unknown other, like the unknown other is the imagined threat.
Right, right.
Which seems to me just brings us back to the problem that if I feel like what we're talking about in some way, again, is how we constitute a we.
Yeah.
In non-toxic ways. And I think the reason I'm coming back to it is because I think it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
That actually for every nation, it's really hard. It's sort of the achievement of a nation.
Yeah.
Is to constitute a we, hopefully in relatively non-toxic ways. And as you pointed out, based on the classroom we were in today, we may be trying to do it in harder conditions here than many other countries throughout history.
I do think so, yeah. But this constitution of a we is really, really important. You're never going to actually achieve it, right? It's impossible. The dream is impossible, but it's the approach of the dream that's going to get us there. I'm not naive. I am not sentimental. I'm actually hardcore realist, but also hardcore optimist at the same time. You know, the ability to hold these contradictory ideas in the palm of your hands at the exact same time. If you can do that, then you have something. Something I think that's truthful and powerful. That's why this stuff with the storytelling with the young people actually works. We go into a school with narrative four, if we run our full program, right? Not just a once off and go in and out, but test scores go up, absentee levels go down, engagement goes up, empathy goes up, all of these things that are there. So, in this really bad time that we are living in, these really, they feel to me like the most broken times that certainly I have ever lived in. The theme must be repair. And I think if the theme is repair, the process to achieve repair is through storytelling, but even more than storytelling, story listening.
I want to ask you the question you asked the students and teachers at school this morning. You had people find the person they had paired with after they'd come back to a whole group, and you asked them to share what they hoped for that other person. Yeah? Which is a powerful question and a powerful invitation. You talked earlier about 100 years forward, and I want to ask you about sort of...
My hope?
Your hope, and to... imagine we're all gone, 100 years out,
yeah,
a hope or two. Maybe even, let me push it closer to the theme, a hope or two for this country.
Well, a hope or two is that we're not gone. I love Wendell Berry, the Kentucky poet, right? Yeah. And in one of his poems, he says, you know, raindrops on the tin roof, what do they say? We have all been here before. And my hope is that we're not completely tumbling towards doom. My hope is that the America that I took a bicycle around 40 years ago is actually still, even though it looks different, sounds different, and wants to appear more bellicose and different. In its actual core, it's still the same place. My hope is that we don't lose this actual dream. My hope is that we don't lose our optimism, even when we are wildly aware of all the stuff that is going on and all the darkness that's going on. My hope is that we can somehow, you know, harness the energy to, you know, to survive this stuff and to be better. What I really care is about all of you and all of us together, and we have to do it together. It's not about this one person or these one series of people who supposedly are in our government or in our governance. It's more about engaging on a much more powerful level than that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Detour. You just heard part of our Consider This conversation with author Colin McCann. Before we go, I want to turn back to Jalen, Beatty, Malachi, Steve, and Juliana at Adrian C. Nelson High School for one final question.
Do you think it's important that there is some sort of shared story about being American? Like, do you have in your head a sense, this is what an American is?
No. To be American, I don't think that there's like a set type of personality that you need to have in order to be considered American. I think that if you've been here and you've explored the culture and you really like it, and I think that you can say like, oh, I'm American, it's so nice to be here, I love America, then yeah, I think you would consider yourself American by then.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think that, like, if you're in America, then you're American.
Yeah.
So I'll feel like that, to answer your question, an American is someone who's in America.
Is there a story or a core part of the story about the United States that stands out in your head? And I know that's an impossible question, but still.
I would say it's definitely, like, U.S. definitely changes the perspectives for you when you move here. Because at the beginning when I don't know if you guys experienced that, but before I moved to the United States, I really thought about the American dream. And I was like, oh my gosh, American high school. Oh my gosh, parties. Oh my gosh, prom, football games. That's amazing. Like, how could ever anyone experience that? And I thought that, like, United States has endless opportunities for me. And I really wanted to move to the United States. And when I moved here, I was like, oh, well, it's really, really different at the same time, but really the same also. Because people are really nice, which... you guys love small talks, which I really unexperienced too. When I walked into the coffee shop and I was like, hey, can I get a coffee? They're like, how's your day going so far? And I'm like, why? Why do you need to know that? I really appreciate it though, but like, why? I get like, for the few weeks, I was like, okay, why are they talking to me? What did I do? Like, is something wrong? But you guys just so nice people. And this endless amounts of opportunities actually comes to your mind. You're like, I have to use them. Like, if they're given to me, I cannot just give them away and just sleep through them or procrastinate and just really have to like focus on them. But of course, like the American dream is, I would say it's non-existent, but it really depends if you work for it. Because if you just came to the United States, it's not going to do anything. You really have to work for that American dream, like they call it. So the opportunities that United States are given to you, actually have to use them to achieve that.
I think for me, it's just the moments of people rising up in the U.S. Like, and I'm talking about for like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, like people like that who like rose up against something that they saw was wrong. And I think that's really like something that I respect as some, you know, they saw racism and they're like, we can do this without needed violence. There's like different ways to approach this. And I mean, there's not only that, there's people, standing up like all over, like different types of ways, like sports, you know. I remember seeing like during like the Black Lives Matter movement, there was you know, athletes who supported like in their way,
like Colin Kaepernick and
stuff. Yeah. And I think just seeing those around like in America is just kind of impressive, just kind of like wowing. Is that a word? Wowing? I think so. Yeah, wowing to witness or just read about or hear about, you know, the way that they stood up. And it's just a solidified part of American history. And It's something that people should not just like only look at when it comes up in like February and stuff like that, or just like something you can just like witness throughout all history. You know, it's something that happened and it's something that people stood against. So, yeah.
Thanks.
I would say if there's one story to represent the U.S., it would be either different or bold. If you go back in history, the U.S. didn't like how they were being treated by the countries. And so they decided to be different. They decided to be bold. They did something about that. And they brought people from other communities, whether it was natives, then it was blacks. Even if there's history there, you know, they just continuously built on it. As like Jalen was saying, Martin Luther King, he saw something wrong with the system. He said something about it, being different like other countries. The U.S. doesn't only represent like one thing, like Kenya represents Kenyans. You know, Ukraine probably represents mostly Ukrainians. Whenever you hear America, you hear so many different people, so many different ethnicities. You know, there's so many different opportunities. I would say back at home in Kenya, they have like a high school test, right? And that basically determines your career path in life. And if you don't score good, then you can't go to those big universities and you can't get those opportunities. But if you come to the U.S., you can slowly build your way up, seeing those, you know, like those doors open and, you know, being different and being bold, you know, and it really builds off of each and every single person. Even if down to the bone, I represent, I'm a Kenyan, I have the Kenyan features. Currently, right now, I would say I'm part of something bigger than just me.
That's a bar. I'm sorry.
That's amazing. Steve.
Oh my goodness.
In this episode, you heard the voices of students at Adrian C. Nelson High School in Happy Valley, Oregon. Huge thanks to the educators there who did so much to make these conversations possible. Colin McCann is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Let the Great World Spin, Transatlantic, and many other books. He's also the president and co-founder of Narrative 4, a nonprofit organization that uses personal storytelling to build empathy between young people. You can learn more about his work at colinmccann.com. And you can hear the entirety of our Consider This Conversation with Colin at oregonhumanities.org. Thanks for listening to The Detour from Oregon Humanities. Anna McLean is our producer. Ali Sylvester, Karina Brisky, and Ben Waterhouse are our assistant producers. This is Adam Davis. See you next time.